long, thick fingers, the way he'd stroked hundreds, thousands of clits. The engine roared. Come on, girl, just give me this one last stretch. The lights at Laurel Canyon were red. Shit! Larry had a split-second decision to make. The traffic looked sparse. He pressed his foot down on the pedal as hard as he could and blew past the lights at top speed, narrowly avoiding a motorcycle crossing the intersection. Yes! He slapped the dash. Fuck yeah! The car behind him hit the light on the green and didn't slow. It kept pressing forward, and Larry didn't notice the fresh-laid patch of asphalt in the road until he hit it. The Camaro bounded and swerved. He fought to maintain control, but overcompensated, like critics accused him of later in his career, leaning too far into self-parody to survive the unforgiving film and TV industry. And the car spun out, tires screeching. No, 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 no! Slam! The Camaro hit the ditch and struck a sycamore at high speed, the windshield shattering inward in a rain of glass. Larry's head struck the driver's window with blinding pain, cracking it. The front end was totaled. The mangled hood popped like a virgin's cherry. The back left wheel spun 6 inches above the asphalt. Oil leaked in a puddle in the dirt. The vanity plate had fallen off and lay against a nearby tree. SXMCHEN, spelled out in blue letters beneath California written in red script. Larry nearly lost consciousness as his forehead dropped against the wheel. The horn blared out into the night, but he couldn't seem to lift his head. It felt too heavy for his shoulders, as if it belonged to someone else. A black gloved hand smashed through the remains of the driver door window, brushed aside broken glass to grab Larry by the hair, something Larry had done dozens of times to dozens of women, and pulled him back to the seat. He couldn't move. His breath came shallow. A crushing silence filled the space left by the horn. The gloved hand reached past Larry. He watched through dazed, blood-tinted eyes as the hand turned the keys, shutting off the engine, retracting from the glassless window with the keys held between pinky and thumb. There was a jingle, barely heard over the ringing in Larry's ears, as the man threw them into the woods. The engine ticked rhythmically in the semi-dark. What are you? Larry swallowed, the dry click of his Adam's apple audible. What do you want with me? The man leaned in, turning slowly toward Larry until his dark blue eyes were visible within that ridiculous mask, the one made to look like one of those yellow, blonde, inflatable sex dolls, with the two pink skin and red lips perpetually opened in an exaggerated O. The freak behind the mask blinked, as if the answer was obvious. We're going to make a film together, Larry, the man said, his voice muffled by the polystyrene. As Larry lost consciousness for the second time that night, the man in the mask unlocked the door and began wrenching it open. 2. Yesterday. Larry got the call a little after noon. He was already 2 whiskeys deep, having seen the news early and read the story several times. He cleared his throat, swallowed an acrid belch that tasted like orange juice and vodka filtered through an ashtray, and picked up the phone. Sorry to call so early, Lair, his manager, Tom Gorski, said. I was already up. It was true he rarely woke before noon, but today he'd shot up around 9 and hadn't been able to get back to sleep. Something had been nagging at him, the tail end of a nightmare or a vague intuition he couldn't put his finger on. When he saw the story in the morning papers, he set down his espresso, which he always called espresso, and broke out the absolute vodka from the freezer, poured it into a jug of orange juice, dumping in Galliano, and making himself a stiff Harvey Wallbanger. I guess you heard about Linda, Tom said. Larry swallowed another mouthful of liquor. I heard. You still haven't heard from her? The Times had reached out to Tom, her manager, for comment. He told them they hadn't spoken in a week. Her distraught husband put in the call to the cops 2 days ago. When she didn't come home a second night, her husband, Chet Daniels, a low-budget schlock horror director who'd been casting Linda Flint in his films for over a decade, decided to contact the press. They were just finishing up pre-pro for his new flick, he'd said, and were supposed to begin shooting in a few days. He couldn't shoot anything without his star, or as he was quoted as having